Inside the Birds is back. What's going on, everybody? Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan here for middle of the week Inside the Birds film review podcast. The Eagles with a big win that had some unforeseen ramifications for the team they beat, the Tennessee Titans, as the Eagles won that game 35-10. And really, Adam, one of their most complete game of the year, because they saw excellent play on offense, defense, and special teams. I don't know if they've had a game yet where all three of those phases excelled at the same time.
They did. No, I know you've been, I heard some interviews on Mike Gill's show on 973 South Jersey. And I know you feel like, not only the best team in the NFC, I think you and I agree, but you think they're the best. And they are, by the way, in our power rankings, we put the Eagles back to one. But the thing with the special teams is we got some really interesting special teams nuggets a couple of league sources gave us. So we've been saving them. But the question is, can they sustain this excellent special teams play? As you said, they all played together for the first time, all three phases, one game this year, although the Eagles are obviously an elite team. But to have sustainability, you've got to be able to do it week after week. I don't know if they can do that because they haven't been able to do it yet.
Well, they did make some interesting moves that we'll get into that will impact special teams, and one of them that might not impact it favorably, depending on how they view this person playing. We'll get into that in a second. As we always do, we'll remind you, we will have our Friday podcast previewing the show, previewing the Eagles-Giants game. It's amazing that we've gone this long without an Eagles-Giants game, but The first one will be this Sunday. We'll be doing a watch party again, our final watch party of the year, at Rivers Casino and Sportsbook. And I have to say, thanks to some people who've been showing up lately, we're starting to get a little bit of a crowd at the pregame show to see us and Greg Cosell and Jason Ivan, of course. And just wanted to say, give a shout out to both Fred and Jeff, who came out to see us at our past pregame show. They were able to get some pictures with Jason Ivan after. They enjoyed the show. It's funny because I believe it was Fred or Jeff. One of them told Jason that he was their favorite receiver. And Jason didn't believe him. He goes, come on. He goes, no, really, I always liked the way you played. That's how humble.
Did he say the best 81? He should have said the best player to wear at number 81.
The best 81, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, and so, then yeah, they we'll got there.
That'll be a 10 a.m. start.
Yeah, by the way, they got a game time watch, right?
Yes, we did give them one of the game time, the Eagles logoed game time watches, and we'll be giving away perhaps a few more at the watch party on Sunday at Rivers Casino and Sportsbook. So another reason to stop by, you have a chance to win. Now, for those watching on YouTube, I just happen to have what you just mentioned in front of me, Adam. This is, hopefully people can see the game time watch logo there. I know I got the Eagles virtual screen making that a little bit
difficult. Right there. It's there. Nice. You got it. It is a really nice watch.
That's a nice watch right there.
Yeah, we put it right in front of us when we were doing our show at Rivers Casino. Yeah, it is really nice.
Yeah. Awesome. I finally got the good angle on that. So and we were able to give that away.
But you could also, if you're not there, of course, 20% is it 20% off? They have that.
Yeah. The promo code is ITB20, ITB20 at GameTimeWatch.com. So also,
the last watch part, do we still have those Super Bowl hats left?
We do. We've got a lot of different merchandise to give away.
By the way, the hats that Jeff has that he's been giving out for the last year at our watch parties, they're the same exact hats the players, coaches, and front office got when they were handed to them in the locker room.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got them, but they're awesome. And I was like, these hats are worth $40.
Yes. And plus we get Jason Ivan to autograph them. So it's double the pleasure with that. So come on out to the watch party. We will be there. It should be a great game, Eagles Giants. And we will have a lot of preview with that. Of course, you can join our Patreon channel. It's patreon.com/insidethebirds. We've had lots of great interviews with a former offensive coordinator, former defensive coordinator, former NFL head coach. Next one we're going to do is a former NFL general manager. It's our Chalk Talk series, and people have given us great feedback on it. They really like the interviews. And of course, we do the monthly Ask ITB with our Patreon followers. That's up. So even if you're a subscriber and you can't make it, we put the Ask ITB up afterwards so you can at least see what questions we're asking, get answers from us. And we also enjoy the interaction with it. So it's really fun.
Awesome. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say that, by the way, we're not allowed to put anything due to our agreement with Patreon. We can't put any of this on YouTube,
right,
from the Patreon content or anywhere else. It's all exclusive to you if you subscribe. And the great thing is what we're going to do for this former GM, once we announce who it is, we're going to announce it next week. This guy has had a lot of success. I don't want to give it away because if I give you two hints, you're going to get it. And he's a good dude and he's doing some media work and, you won't get it. You won't figure it out from that, but, he's had an interesting career and I have my own questions. You have your own questions and I'm curious what our Patreon subscribers, once you find out who it is, we'll probably take the best 3 or 4 questions for him. And I'm sure the guy will answer it. Cause he's likes to talk. So it's the other thing is before we move on here, everyone we've had on from DeFilippo to Paul Gunther and Mark Trestman. Do we have anyone else yet? Or is this this person?
That's the three so far. The month.
They like to talk. Yeah.
That is true. People are tired of hearing us. They go watch those things. We just ask questions, sit back and let these guys go. All right, so let's get into some of the Eagles news here. Now, the first bit of news, Adam, it seems kind of like obvious, but it's worth mentioning nonetheless. The Eagles can clinch a playoff spot this weekend with a win over the Giants, or if the 49ers lose to the Bucs and the Seahawks lose to the Panthers. So I think their best shot of that is just they win. Yeah. They play the Giants. Or a tie, correct. Yeah. Which the Giants are already coming off a tie against Washington. So, and this is like a good game. It's sort of like a demon exercising game, I think, for the Eagles offense and Jalen Hurts a little bit. I know they won that second game after losing the first one, but even that second game, I wake up in cold sweats from the first half of that game. That game was tied 6-6 at the half, and Jake Fromm was so bad. I can find very few games I remember witnessing that were as bad as that first half of football.
All right. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Did Mike Glennon not play in that game?
He did. And that's what made it. That's just adding insult to insult. I mean, he wasn't much better.
See, despite
a long way, man, in a year.
I know. It's crazy. Yeah. Daniel Jones is back healthy, but despite Hurts' issues in that game, he really struggled. I mean, you know, let's call it like it is. We'd have to go back and look at everything, but I'm assuming that was his worst NFL game. He just didn't have it.
Well, I think the first game was his worst NFL game against the Giants. That was the game they lost, and he threw 3 interceptions.
Oh, was that the game?
That was the game at Giants Stadium.
Rager jumped up, and he should have had it, but there were a couple bit like Hurts doesn't make any of those type of bad decisions that he. There was one in particular was terrible in that game.
Before halftime, he was fleeing to his right, and all he had to do was throw the ball out of bounds, and then he tried to force one into the end zone and got picked off. Yeah,
but he doesn't do that anymore. So what I was saying is that
he doesn't.
Despite his issues last year, you still saw good. You isolate some throws. You go, you know, you could work with that. That's when I said last year, despite his inconsistency, I still saw Kirk Cousins, and obviously, he's having a better year than Kirk Cousins could ever have.
Yes.
Kirk Cousins is a pretty solid quarterback.
Yeah, I know. You and I agree on that. And other people be like, oh, why are you even mentioning? No, his numbers say he's a good quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah, solid. No, it's solid. It's just the rest of the roster hasn't been good enough. But anyway, so they could clinch already. It's the former just beating the Giants this week or tying them. Oh, my God. I can imagine. I don't know if you ever talked to any NFL people about tying. I don't even know. It's like you feel dirty. You don't know how to feel because it's not a loss. It's a half a win and half a loss. It's bizarre.
Yeah, the thing I hate about a tie in football, and I don't know, maybe this is sort of my bias. I don't want to diss on hockey or soccer and try to make it seem like those aren't rigorous sports. But there's a lot of violent collisions in football, more so than any other sport, okay? And you play once a week, so you put so much preparation into it that it definitely seems incongruous with the whole objective of the game and the whole format and template of what football is to have a tie. Like, you put that much on the line each week. You only got one game a week because of it. You do so much planning. And I get that you know, two teams can really just be fit to be tied, but I just don't like ties in football for that reason. Especially,
I remember when they went from 15 minutes to 10 minutes, there was an uproar. Like, and I was surprised by that because the problem is you know, if you're a coach, you don't want your players playing too much. You know, you don't want them playing five quarters to begin with. But, you know, when it was 15 minutes, they're like, well, first of all, wait a minute. We don't want to tie. First of all, you don't want to tie because it doesn't, you don't know how, as I said a minute ago, you don't know how to feel. When it's 15 minutes, you figured someone scores so you don't have a tie. So I've heard a lot as I discuss this. I've heard a lot from different people. People have their different reactions to, oh, yeah, it should be 10 minutes because you don't want your players even playing five more extra minutes, let alone 10 or 15. So they're different avenues how to feel. But it was the competition committee, I remember. It was the league, really. They voted on it at an owner's meetings to shorten it from 15 to 10 minutes. But to me, why cheat the fans out? I'm a little bit different. I'd rather be 15 minutes because I don't want to tie, man. It's disgusting. I don't want to tie.
Right, right. Now, the only counter argument that I would say to my own argument and what we just both agreed on is that it can benefit you, even though it seems completely meaningless at the time. You're trying to make the playoffs. You may have a 10-6-1 record that's better than 10-7 because it's 1-2 or
correct.
More.
Yes.
So there is some potential down the road benefit to a tie. It doesn't sit well with me that football games can be tied. So, but nonetheless, I don't even know how do we get onto that? Cause Washington
right. But no, what happened was here's what Bill Polian told me when we worked at ESPN. He said, the problem with it, first of all, the worst is let's say you would play an overtime game and you'd play the old way, the 15 minute quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say you had a trout. Let's say you're an East Coast team. You play at home, then you have to travel to Seattle the next week. You got a 5 or 6 hour flight. You're exhausted. Or let's say you had a short week. You played on Sunday, played in overtime, and then you got to travel, not to Seattle. You wouldn't do that. And Joe Banner told us when we had him on a couple years ago about when they got after the league, when they played a Sunday, they had to travel to Seattle. It might have been the Vince Young game. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I know Young did start at Seattle, but maybe it was that game. But anyway, you don't want your team traveling. You don't want them playing a 15-minute game and then a 15-minute of overtime, then have to travel out west the next week. Like that's so. Bill said there were two ways to look at it, but he felt there was a reaction to something that happened. That's typically what happens is sometimes the league overreacts, owners overreact to certain things. So who knows?
In football, really? The NFL overreact? Never.
Yeah, I know.
No, yeah. I don't have a taste for it, but I do understand some of the arguments in favor of it. Let's talk about some of the major transactional news for the Eagles. Obviously, the big news that came down Tuesday night or Tuesday afternoon was that Robert Quinn was going to go on injured reserve. And anyone listening to us for the last 2 or 3 weeks probably isn't surprised. He goes on injured. The knee kept him sidelined from the game this past Sunday. We've been saying since the Washington game, even someone who's been, you know, who helps us out, league sources, watch tape, that he just didn't look right. He has not looked right at any point since being an Eagle. And at first there was a back that he was on. Now it's the knee. As you and I have talked about, hearing people say his rush does not look like it was last year. The bend isn't there. The explosion's not there. And so at this point, Adam, he's definitely out 4 games. Now, if you think about this, his first game to come back from IR would be the last game of the year. It's very unlikely the Eagles are going to be playing important players the last game of the year. And they could also, they probably almost definitely will have a first round bye. So Robert Quinn might get 6 weeks here to really rest.
Not a lock they will, but yeah, not a lock.
Definitely not a lock, but there's the potential of it. Yeah.
No, they're the favorite. No, you're right. I mean, they're a favorite, but it's certainly not a lock because those damn pesky Vikings won't lose. The Eagles have the tiebreaker over them. It's a good problem to have here for the Eagles in terms of, you know, as you said, set it up for week 18. Maybe the game won't mean anything, so they wouldn't play him anyway. So yeah. So what Cosell told us on our show, our pregame show, and this is you had a source who told you that the back injury was not a result of a practice injury. It was actually in a game. He didn't look right, and that played to what Greg said. Greg said not only can he not bend, he looks stiff. He couldn't lower his body like he was running standing up. That's not, you can't do that as a pass rusher.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the guy had 18 and a half sacks last year. So, you know, I don't know what to think of it. I mean, sometimes guys, I mean, they get older and they definitely can start having issues with their body and lose it. Sometimes it's just an injury and they just need time and rest. So we'll have to see with Robert Quinn what goes on over the next few weeks. But it just has not, you know, nobody's knocking the trade. It seemed great at the time. It seemed obvious at the time. You can only do so much homework on a guy, right? I mean, he had 18 and a half sacks last year. He only had one with the Bears in 7 weeks. So maybe that should have been a little bit of a flag. Who knows? But then you have to go through every game. And is he creating pressures? It's not just always about sacks. The bottom line is he's had no impact on the Eagles since he's come over. But the bottom line is also that, you know, he was sort of in there for depth, right? When Derek Barnett was lost, but the Eagles have really been kind of rocking with Hassan Reddick, Josh Sweat, and Brandon Graham. As long as there's not an injury to those three, I think they're still in pretty good shape. But there are times that you and I have seen that this team doesn't always get a great front four rush either. So when you play the better offensive lines and the better quarterbacks, it's nice to have as many good pass rushers as you can have.
I mean, they owned, we'll get into it later, but they absolutely owned Tennessee's offensive line. It was something like, you know, it's one thing to watch on television. And then you and I were able to speak to some people Tuesday. It was just a massacre for Tennessee's offensive line. Had this game been close, they might have had 10 sacks. It was just because it was just one of the things where they wouldn't pull the starters. It was pretty fascinating to see what they were able to do. But yeah, because right now, if we look at the rest of the transactions, so Janoris Robinson was activated off of IR. Mm-hmm. Sasha Ray was waived. The Eagles actually now have one spot on their 53-man roster open. So we'll see what they do there.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Practice squad moves. There's going to be some tango being played here. I will see what happens on Saturday for the game, but they released Anthony Rush, who just signed last week. Mm-hmm. Javon Guidry, corner, and Kawan Baker. Yeah, so they have open
cleaning house, I suppose. Right? They're cleaning house from the practice squad.
Yeah, it is. Boy, they're pretty active practice squad movers and shakers. You know that it's interesting now. We'll see what they do by Saturday. That's a transaction deadline for Sunday games at 4 p.m. Eastern. We'll see if they re-sign these guys. There's usually a reason why you're doing this. Because remember, practice is later today. The first practice for the week is Wednesday, and you want all these moves done. If you're going to bring anyone in for the practice squad, they're going to be added later today, so we'll see what they do.
Right. All right, so let's move on to Jordan Davis, because we had cautioned people last week or two as we were getting closer to him coming off of IR and into the practice window, that just because he's out there doesn't mean he's going to go back and you know, be completely pain-free and 100% healthy. And Jonathan Gannon acknowledged in his press conference on Tuesday that Jordan Davis, who only played, I forget how many snaps, I think it was fewer than 12, right? I think it was
like 6 or 8. I'll double check.
Yeah, I think it was 6 snaps that the ankle bit him a little bit. Like, he could feel it when he was out there, which is basically what we've been saying for a couple of weeks now, is that you can't just assume if he's active off the onto the 53 and out there, he's going to be 100%. We talked about the severity of that high ankle sprain, the leg area that was bothering him, and that it might take some time. So it was good to see him get back out there, but a little, I don't want to say alarming, but it's, you know, maybe probably expected. I'm sure they knew when he was out there that it might, you know, just bite on him a little bit.
So a couple things happened. So this floored me. He actually played more special team snaps than defensive snaps by one, but still when he was able to get out there, he did. Now someone told me this, so I went up and found it on Tuesday. So you could see it on the coaching tape. He points to his ankle. He kind of collapsed.
Yeah.
And he pointed to it. And that I only went to see it because someone told me about it, because you need to take a look at Jordan Davis, whatever number he is, number 90. Mm-hmm.
90.
And because he went down, because when you talk to personnel people, they don't say the name, they say not number. Because when they're writing up advanced, whoever, I spoke to an advanced person who's got the Eagles suit, and he goes, 90 went down, man, you got to go see it. I'm like, okay, I will.
Yeah.
And it didn't look good. Now we'll see. And remember, you know, Jordan Davis, by the way, he did tell the media that he was feeling it in practice, but he was just going to practice through it. And he kind of said he knew he was going to be able to play. Mm-hmm. But now this is his first injury. A high ankle sprain, a true high ankle sprain, is really 6 weeks, not four. So yeah. To me, I don't know why they just don't shut him down for a couple more weeks, but they have better.
I wonder if the opponent had something to do with it.
Oh, because of Henry and.
Yeah, if they felt like even a 75% Jordan Davis could help them. That's a strange risk of re-aggravation to me, but you're trying to win football games. So, but again, he only played six snaps. Kaiser White, Sean Bradley with the hamstring, Quez Watkins with the shoulder. Those are all guys that we're going to have to find out about this week unless you know something more about that. I think we just have to see what they're able to do.
Yeah, so Kaiser White's the one. It's a lower leg injury. We don't know if it's hamstring, ankle. Uh-huh. We don't know what it is. So we'll know. They have to listen today. Yep. And Kobe Dean replaced him. That's the story. I mean, that was because people have been dying. The Eagle fans who love the draft and knew all about Kobe Dean, you know, they're able to see him, made some plays. We'll get into that.
Yep.
So we'll find out later today. And then, of course, the big one, and it would start today. This is the way teams explain it to me. If they want the guy to be activated, and this is, we're talking about Avante Maddox here, they're not going to wait till Thursday or Friday, barring something highly unforeseen. They're going to start today. If they think there's a potential that he can play this week, he's going to start working today, almost certainly.
So what would you make then if they did not – because Wednesday is just a walkthrough day. If they list him as do not practice, do you think that is –
It's a bad sign.
Bad time for the rest of the league.
He's not on the roster. Remember, he's not on the roster. They don't have to list anything.
Oh, that's I forgot about that. Well, that's my point. If they don't make him active to the 53 on Wednesday.
Well, no, activate him to the window, you mean, the 21-day.
That's right. The 21-day window. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If they don't, that's probably not a great sign then.
Not a great sign at all because you cannot practice without you. They have to be designated for return. That allows them to practice.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that'll tell you everything. Because, again, with Davis last week, they had him participate in the walkthrough. That was a good sign that he would potentially play. Because you'd have to see, because they do it. They don't just walk through like the old-fashioned walkthrough. They actually do a jog through. So they have a good pace to it. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But that's and obviously Goddard. Yeah, Goddard seems to be pretty optimistic. We should mention that before we move to the tape stuff that we got. But Goddard seems pretty optimistic for week 15 at Chicago.
All right. That is that's good. That means this will be assumingly his final week of not practicing, being on IR. And then, of course, after the game against the Giants, which will be the fourth of four games for him, then he should be able to be activated into the window.
That one, based on what Goddard was telling the media, I guess a bunch of the reporters said he was pretty confident.
Right.
Because he was out of the sling and he's feeling good. And you give him another week, or two weeks technically, because that was last week. So you figure two more weeks, you should be good to go to at least start practicing. And then, but the other thing, we should mention this before we move on, he has to get clear for contact on the injured shoulder. He can't play. He's got to be able to get hit. And they're going to have to see if he wears the red jersey at practice, because he's got to be able to block too.
Yep.
Although, interestingly enough, as we set up the tape study stuff, would you believe Grant Calcaterra had some good blocks on Sunday? Would you believe that?
If you told me going into the game that he would, I would not believe it. But
yeah, I know. Actually,
watching the game, and it was sort of a surprise there. So that's a good thing.
Someone told me, in fact, he played a lot of snaps. That's a good sign.
Yeah, they were in 12 personnel a little more than I thought. We'll get into that. I mean, do they even need Dallas Goedert back? I scored 75 points the last two games. Who needs Dallas Goedert?
I'll tell you what, my boy Stoll. How about Jack Stoll? like Calcaterra it could really run. I mean, they had 4 for 60 in that game, but let's hit it.
Well, you want to talk about some players, by the way, as we get into our friends from Mojo who have created the sports stock market where you can invest in players. Forget about Fortune 500 companies. Invest in quarterbacks, running backs, tight ends, wide receivers, guys that you know, guys you watch every Sunday, Thursday, sometimes Saturday, sometimes Monday if you're watching on Monday. Monday's tough. Or no, which has been tougher, Monday night or Thursday night? I think Thursday night has still been the worst, right?
That was the Russell Wilson game against the Colts, which is one of the worst we've ever seen.
Oh, it's just awful. But hey, even on Thursday night, there's somebody that usually plays well enough that you might want to invest to on Mojo, which, sure, you know, it's an app that everybody's downloading now and everybody's building their portfolios. The shares entitle you to a guaranteed payout that's based on career ending stats. That's what's so cool about this. It's not like 1 year of fantasy football. You get to follow these guys for the rest of their careers. There's no off days, there's no off seasons, because share prices can rise and fall constantly in real time, and everything again is based on career long projections. You can cash out at any time. You can also build a portfolio full of players that you're buying and selling on your own terms, every play, every game, or every season. So as we've talked about, there's that multiplier button too that allows you to double, triple, quadruple your investment if you pick the right person and he has the right trend upward. If it goes downward, well, then you lose a little bit, but that's what makes it all
stock market.
Mojo, of course, is available in New Jersey on iOS, and just by downloading the app, you got a chance to win $10,000 in free shares of player stock. Now, I want to say something that's important. Just if you don't live in New Jersey, you can't buy and trade right now, but just like all sports gambling and things of that nature, Mojo is going to be available in other states very soon at some point. So my advice would be get a head start, because you can actually be in a different state and download Mojo and go through the player investment, their share prices up and down. It's almost like studying before the exam, right? Before you start building your portfolio, you have some time to just see how the system works. How do players go up and down? So again, I would encourage everybody, if they want to get involved with this, even if you don't live in New Jersey, download Mojo on your iOS, okay? And again, there's the description link will be in the box of this YouTube video and the podcast. You can get $10,000 in free shares of player stock. You got to be 21 and physically located in New Jersey to trade on Mojo. You got a gambling problem. Help's available at 1-800-GAMBLER. Adam, it will be no surprise to you that A.J. Brown's share price is up 1.74% after an 8-catch, 119-yard, 2-touchdown game. But again, there are other receivers who could have those numbers, and their price would shoot up big time, but A.J. Brown's good. So I wouldn't say an every week thing for him, but this is not out of the ordinary for him. So his stock did not surge.
That's interesting. That's interesting, because he's so good and he's been so consistent. Mm-hmm. Other than the two fumbles back to back, it's funny. He had a crosser. There's another thing I didn't know anything about. If someone told me this, he goes, take a look at this. He's better with ball control. I mean, ball security. He made sure he secured it over the middle. So clearly they were working with him on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And another good example, Jalen Hurts has an amazing game. 380, 3 touchdowns, another rushing touchdown. I mean, that's a 4-touchdown game, 380 yards, and then about over 390 total. He's up 2.35%. That just shows you the bar that Jalen Hurts has now set. Like, he could have thrown 2 touchdowns and 250 yards, and his share price might have gone down. So hopefully everybody got on Jalen Hurts pretty early there. Although, again, he still is figuring out ways to raise his share price. All right, I want to ask you about a couple guys real quick that are potentially risers.
Okay.
Brock Purdy, up 64, by the way, 64.78%. Do you think he can be the backup for the – I mean, will he – he has got a chance to at least solidify himself as a backup.
Well, he's going to be the starter for this week, and then
right, Josh Johnson. I'm talking about for the future, though, since this is all about career.
No. I mean, I asked a very good – one of my best college football sources. I said, hey, I don't know if you have this guy in your area. I said, do you know anything about Brock Purdy? He goes, oh, yeah. He goes, I'll get you the – he goes, I don't have him in my area. He goes, but I'll get it for you. So the guy calls me and he read me his team scouting report on him. I was like, geez. I was like, is this Gardner Minshew? Minshew's a much better player. Much better.
Okay.
He goes, he's a scrappy kid. He's smart. Has some athleticism, but he was Mr. Irrelevant for a reason. Most teams didn't have a draftable grade on him.
Trey Lance is probably going to be their quarterback next year. Jimmy Garoppolo actually probably will be moved on from after this year, and it gives Brock Purdy the chance to be a backup, and you know that means he's one step away from being the starter. So by the way, I got to ask you about this guy, because he's one guy you pointed out, and he did have a good game against the Eagles, one of the few Titans, and that's that pass catching tight end that they have, Chigo.
Oh, Chig.
Okonkwo. Yeah, Chigo Okonkwo.
Yeah.
Four catches, 68 yards, had a 41-yarder, I believe. He's up 7.8%. I mean, this is like the Titans' only good pass-catching tight end, right? I mean, Austin Hooper's okay. He doesn't have explosion. I forget who their other guy is. I don't know.
It's Austin Hooper and Jeff Swaim.
Jeff, who is a G-E-O-F-F, by the way.
I know. So like one of the brethren.
By the way, to the point on you, what it's about, not just what you do, but what you're expected to do. River Craycraft, for the second straight week, has seen his share price rise. This one, 6.84%. What'd he do? He got two passes for 29 yards.
one more thing before we move on. Mm-hmm. Had Goddard not gotten hurt, the Eagles likely, I can't say likely, but had a real chance to have Brown over 1,000 yards, which he's going to hit in this next game. Devontae Smith, for sure, as long as he plays 16 games, he's going to hit over 1,000 yards. And Goddard was on pace for 1,025 yards based on his average yards per game.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, obviously he got hurt. So that's just crazy. I mean, this is how good this talent is. Mm-hmm. Brown, Smith, and Goddard are absolute studs. I mean, they're just – it's a shame Goddard got hurt, but he'll be back.
Don't you think that the Eagles – listen, again, any team, any Saturday, any Sunday in the playoffs can have a bad day.
Sure.
Packers showed that last year. But with Jimmy Garoppolo going down for the year and with the Cowboys' sort of history of having good teams but not advancing very far – in the playoffs, it just seems tailored. I don't want to say the Eagles have an easy ride to the Super Bowl by any stretch of the means, but it got a little easier.
Oh, a lot easier. Sure.
Garoppolo,
because you know, Kyle Shanahan said that they knew it. Kyle Shanahan said on Monday that he didn't have a Lisfranc injury,
right?
So it's, you know, it's a broken foot. He's obviously can't play in the rest of the regular season. I mean, maybe if they make it the Super Bowl, he returns. But it's a Purdy show. Josh Johnson will back him up. And look, they're in trouble. Look, there's no question. They were going to be my pick to challenge the Eagles in the playoffs now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after that in the NFC, it's just Minnesota, their secondary's got real issues. Tampa Bay's a joke. They've fallen off. Dallas is good, but they sometimes they play with a lack of discipline. They just lost another corner, Anthony Brown, for the season.
Right.
Jordan Lewis is on IR, so you worry about that. And that's, look, it's the Niners were the team, man. Their defense is unbelievable. But now you're putting a 50th ranked quarterback in there. I mean, that's the problem.
Feels like the only thing right now for the Eagles is don't have that second enemy, injuries. Stay healthy, and you got a good, good shot. Injuries can hurt, but, you know, And they're kind of navigating their way through some significant ones, but nothing that makes you think it's catastrophic and they won't be able to you know, advance and reach their potential. All right, let us talk about the tape breakdown. We will first start with the Eagles offense. They're just an unbelievable offensive performance against the Titans defense. So here's the thing. I think because I heard a sports talk show being discussed, that how come the Titans played so much man defense? And I don't know if they played a ton. They started it off, though, in a lot of man and then got out of it pretty quickly. But I think they think it's worth wondering, why did they even start in man? That's not really their bread and butter. They were
I was told they played a lot of cover two, not as much man as people thought. I didn't get the breakdown of how much zone versus man they played, but Here's what we knew. We knew this. The one thing that we knew watching the game live is the Eagles had a game plan. They were coming out throwing, and they were not going to stop. Hurts had 13 plays of over 10 yards or more in this game that were completed.
Yeah, pass plays, right?
Yes. Think about that, folks. I mean, that his most was 14. I believe it was against Washington, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
They were relentless. It was just one of these things where the weather was good. It was in the low 40s, very little wind. You could throw in the 20s, but the only problem is, though, we saw on the Devontae Smith touchdown, when you're throwing in cold weather, there's a point where the ball's going to die a little bit if you're throwing deep. And if you notice, you could see it on the coaching tape. I watched it. The ball, he had to wait for it. And you could see the ball also had a little bit of a tail on it, but it got there and he adjusted and he scored. I mean, the route was terrific. So,
yeah.
So here's the bottom line. Here's the great stuff about Hurts. This is Hurts 22 versus 21 versus 21. Decisive as hell. One, three step, one, two, three, hitch out. There were some plays in this game. And again, I got all this stuff sent to me. So I'm like, I got to look at I can't wait to see it. And I watched it Tuesday. He had some plays. It's like he got what he thought he was going to get. Now, whatever advance they did, the coaches obviously told him. And they called Steichen called the right plays. And Hurts was just magnificent of understanding coverage. You know, this is the stuff that people wondered about him. He didn't read defense as well in 2020 when he was throwing there. He wasn't ready to play. 21, very inconsistent, not good enough. This year, it's like he's incredible at it. He's just really good. And the protection was you could argue like the Washington game, Minnesota games were really good. This was magnificent. This is what they did to Jeffrey Simmons. It wasn't just the combo blocks and the double teams. They stood him up, folks. You've heard us talk about how some teams stood up Cox. The difference is Cox didn't always bring his best, where Simmons brings his best. Cox is playing really well right now. We'll get to that later. They stonewalled the guy. I mean, I think he's 98. Again, these people tell me these numbers, and I have to go look it up. I think he's 98.
Yeah.
Pro personnel people, folks, if you want
that's
to know.
That's Jeffrey Simmons.
Numbers, not names. He's 98, got stonewalled, or whatever the guy said. Philly stood him up. I'm like, really? Okay. It was something magnificent. The guy was, like, silent the whole game. They did a phenomenal job against him. Blew up a couple run plays, but overall, it did. The Eagles could have run for 1 yard. It was irrelevant. The run game, they also had some good runs. Gainwell, by the way, looked really good. We'll get to him in a minute.
Right.
Hurts, his balance is really good. His posture, I was told, was really good. Watch his knee bend and watch him get his torque into his throws. It's all from all 22. You could see this. This is Jeff and I have really good people who've been kind to us, who we've got to know over the years from our travels to the Senior Bowl and Combine, who we keep in touch with. And this is stuff in my notes that I got through a couple phone calls. And he's just got it going on. And here's another one for you. Here's another nugget for you. And this came from training camp. And now we saw it. Now you and I saw it in Miami. We saw it in training camp. His timing now. He's not what we call an anticipation thrower. He's not there yet. But his timing.
Mm-hmm.
So the ball that didn't count, the 40 yard touchdown, which didn't count on the right side, and then of course the next play did. But
yeah,
the bomb. He threw it when approximately you could say that Brown was 70% in his route, and he just threw it because he knew he would win. Trust Hurts did the stuff last year. The trust that he has. We saw this in training camp. It's manifests itself almost every week. But this is pretty special in this game.
So on the second Hurts touchdown to A.J. Brown, I think A.J. Brown said, I think I was watching his press conference, and he said he didn't beat his man well. He actually didn't. McCreary was with him, but he didn't think Jalen was going to throw him the ball because he didn't have the step on his man. Jalen threw it anyway, and then you saw what I think is just sort of this elite ability that we've seen of A.J. Brown, because he has said this more than once. Go back to the Steelers game, same thing. He didn't know that Jalen Hurts was going to throw that ball initially because of the coverage, the route, and he thought he was supposed to be a clear out guy, but he had a little bit of a step. So A.J. Brown is so good at recognizing late, not just late hands, but late vision, that the ball is in the air. It's coming to him and being able to make the adjustment to catch the ball. I mean, he and McCreary were like holding each other. Like they were dancing with each other.
Was it Trey Avery, the touchdown?
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry, Avery. I'm saying McCreary. It might have been Avery. Yeah.
Yeah, it was because it might have been 30. Yeah, McCreary might have been 30 numbers.
Yeah.
But the poor kid, you just nailed it. He was right there. It reminds me of that
coverage.
No, he's right there. It reminded me of that play that I saw in training camp when Slay was right there, or OTS, I can't remember. Slay was right there, and he leveraged him.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have the gift of replay at training camp or OTA, so I just had to remember it. And this play with Trey Avery, so I went back, I watched the coaching tape on Tuesday. He's something else, man. He's a special football player. I remember when we did the first round, because the Eagles made the trade, in the first round, prior to the first round of the draft?
Yeah.
And we did
trade?
The A.J. Brown trade, right? Wasn't it?
That was like in the middle of the first round of the draft. Jordan Davis, yeah.
Right. So we did the post-draft first round draft, and I was so giddy. I was like, folks, you have no idea how special this kid is. And you and I were debating about Jeffrey. I said, dude, no. He's
yeah, no. I already waved the white flag on that
one. No, but what happened there is you knew he's talented, but I think you got lost in the fact that the Titans don't throw the ball a lot.
Yeah, I also, you know, not having seen a whole lot of Titans games, I was so used to seeing his highlights of being more of a run after the catch guy and over the middle. That Titans offense, correct.
Bang eight play over the middle,
yes. Yes, it's set up to run with Derrick Henry and then pop those quick ones over the middle. Exactly. And I knew he was fantastic at that. I just had not seen so much of his downfield strength and the ability to maintain that focus. I mean, Alshon could never I'm not trying to disrespect Alshon, but he just doesn't do those kind of things that AJ Brown does.
You just mentioned it, but you were talking about Brown. Hurts's maintaining his downfield focus.
Mm-hmm.
He had a major problem with dropping his eyes last year. That's what made him wildly inconsistent, to be kind.
Yeah.
This year, he doesn't drop his eye very much. This game, I don't think he did it at all from what I asked a couple people.
No.
He was so good, and he's so his calmness. He's so calm. We see Zach Wilson, by the way, frenetic as hell. This kid Hurts. It's just their coaching is fantastic also, by the way. These guys understand what he's bringing to the table.
Yeah, man.
Someone asked me this week, a friend of mine, he goes, how much better could Hurts get? And I'm going to ask you that. What if you had to say, what could he be better at? The only thing I think is he puts it on the guy, the pass target, but it's not always – sometimes too low. Like he had a pass to Smith where he turned his face and the defender was coming at him. He should have just stood there and threw it to him on third down. It would have been a completion in the first quarter, but he turned his shoulder. But what do you see?
You know what? I'm giving the dude his flowers. Of course, the things that he can get better at, like I think when, and I think it's fair to say when you watch Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, they do a lot of great things, but there's things they can be better at. So or any great quarterback, even Joe Burrow can be better at Sunday.
Yeah, we'll ask Greg and Jason.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk to Greg. And by the way, you know, Greg and Jason, I put a clip up from our pregame show about Jalen Hurts. They did an amazing – you should go to our YouTube platform and check it out. They did an excellent breakdown not only of what his biggest improvements were from last year, but they were both very honest in the way you and I are honest about not thinking that Jalen Hurts would get to this level so quickly. You know, like even they will be the first to admit, just like we are, that this is not something that was very predictable based on just what the tape showed last year and the year before that. So he's just done an amazing job of improving in so many areas. So I could sit here and say, yeah, there are some times where if the first read is not open, there's a little pressure. Instead of climbing the pocket, he may run around it. And that's every quarterback. It's got a little bit of a flaw or deficiency. Right now, he's playing so good that if he played like this for the rest of his life, he'd be a multiple-time Pro Bowl quarterback and probably the best quarterback in Eagles history. So I'm not going to – you know, what's the point at this point now, right? I would say he'll have to show this as he goes on. The Eagles will not be able to have great weaponry every year. Some guys will get injured. Sometimes guys will leave or whatever. Sometimes the offensive line won't be as good, and he'll have to kind of adjust like the great quarterbacks do.
I'll say this much on the offensive line thing. This is what I know about the Eagles, specifically this owner and this general manager. They'll never let the offensive line not be great, unless someone gets hurt. So they'll tack it. But as a passer, you know, we've talked about not being a natural thrower. Cosell said that. We've heard that. It doesn't hurt him, but he's also only 6'1". It's just the certain limitations he has, but I think he's kind of broken down a lot of those limitations. He doesn't have much left.
Certainly.
He just really, as you said, very well. He's just, because last year, before we move on to the running backs, the receivers, and O-line, you would see these isolated throws. You go, wow, that was a really good throw, but he couldn't sustain it. Now, part of it was because he had some injuries on the offensive line. He also didn't have a very good pass target group. Overall, he didn't have A.J. Brown. Smith was a rookie. Mm-hmm. And Quez Watkins, another thing we're going to talk. I can't wait to talk about him. He was not that factor that he is now. It's just you add it all up. Superior coaching, the way he handles his business. He's a coach's son, which I think the guy who went after me on Twitter now he's probably ashamed of himself for saying that I wasn't right. I mean, if you don't think that matters, of course it does. So all this matters. Course. Everything matters, and the kid is a superstar person. And it's one of the most amazing stories of the season. And you know, I got to vote on this one for MVP, and I got to put Geno Smith. I'm at least going to, you know, I got to put him in my top like five. I mean, how can you not? The Seahawks are a 2-win team without Geno Smith.
The season he has had, yeah, you top five. I mean, it's hard to put a guy who's 2 games over 500 and still might. We'll see. They may not make the playoffs. They probably will.
Yeah.
As MVP, but definitely most improved player. I think you can split. You can hedge it, right? You could make Jalen Hurts your MVP, and you could make Patrick Mahomes your offensive player of the year, and you can make Geno Smith your most improved player.
See, the problem is the AP poll, which is what the NFL, which is I think for awards, you know, for incentives and for all the bonuses, they only use the AP, and that doesn't have most improved. They have comeback player of the year, which is a joke. You know, Jalen Hurts never came back from anything. Neither did Geno Smith.
Neither did Geno Smith, right?
Yeah. So
I don't know who's. I'm sure it's very obvious, and I can't think of it at the moment. But who would be the leader for comeback player of the year? Saquon Barkley.
Barkley's a great one. McCaffrey. Yeah. Sure.
McCaffrey had an amazing year.
Pretty good year, but Barkley. Although Barkley's last three games, we'll talk Friday morning about Barkley. But the last three games, it has not been pretty for him.
I feel like there's any wide receivers that I'm missing. There's probably a receiver that was out a little bit last year that I can't think of.
But anyway,
we've given Jalen Hurts his flowers, man. We're both very impressed.
We've been incredibly fair. We've given it, whether it's the front office over our 5 years of the show, we were fair shots at the front office when they screwed things up.
Yeah.
The owner, when we thought he got too involved, we told the truth. So did the Athletic. You know, we both of our entities had similar information. We just call it like we're told. We hear and we don't sugarcoat it when it's bad. But they got something special going on right now. We'll see. As you said, the only thing that could derail it is injuries, but knock on wood for them. So far, they're going to get these guys back.
Yes. By the way, it's still to your point. I don't check too much anymore, but there was a really funny comment. It's probably not funny for the guy who wrote it, but funny to read it. Of that we just have to stop with this theory that the Eagles drafted Jalen Hurts to be a backup quarterback, because you heard them talk about the whole Russell Wilson analogy. They clearly wanted him to be the starter. They just weren't saying it. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's like you and I know what we know. I mean, we're not getting lied to by 1,000 different people. I mean, and it also, it takes away from the greatness, actually, of the great story here of Jalen Hurts.
Yes.
If that were to be true, he really was supposed to be a backup, and he worked his ass off and took advantage of an amazing situation to be not just the starter, but to hold on to that starting spot and flourish in it. So I'm sorry for that person, but you're just wrong.
If Wentz was not insistent of being traded, he wanted out of Philly. I mean, let's call it like it is. We never heard from him, because he was going to be,
Wentz was the one who said, I want out no matter what, even though you still fire Doug, I still want out. So, I mean, it's he wanted out.
Whatever.
If he didn't, he would have been here.
Let me, one thing on that before we move on to running backs, is that we've outlined this before. Okay, so the Russell Wilson stuff, he didn't want to come here, and thank goodness for the Eagles that he didn't. Basically, he looks like cooked, as they're saying. People are saying Russell was cooked. Then you got the Deshaun Watson stuff, which is an absolute mess. You and I outlined last spring about how crazy involved the Eagles were trying to gather information, see what was up. And anyway, so they thank goodness didn't trade for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So look, and the Allen Robinson thing, they were heavy involved. We outlined how much that, you know, we heard the numbers months ago, what they were looking at with him. Thank goodness they didn't get him. And Calvin Ridley, I mean, it's amazing. Amazing. Be careful what you wish for. It's unbelievable.
Greatest plan Bs in the world. All right, the running game. There wasn't that much, but it wasn't a great running game. You know, you had Gainwell. Gainwell actually caught the ball, though. How about that? Three catches for 38 yards. And then one of them was not an easy catch either. It was a nice timing play. It was like a Texas route that I think he ran. He leaked out and came back in. It's so funny because Avant and Q, or somebody was recently saying, why don't they ever try these Texas routes to their running backs? And sure enough, bam, looked like one.
Did you see the spin move he put for 14? Yeah. That was a beautiful spin move. This game, and also he ran the ball. He had a 13-yard run. This is the most explosive he looked. He's not quite who we thought he was in terms of explosives. He's got good short area quicks, and he looked really good in this game.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't show in the numbers. Sanders ran really hard. See, here's the thing. As we set this thing up, as we'll get through the show, I believe, and I don't have anything to totally substantiate it, but I know that Devon Givens said, who was filling in for you on the Fanatic with me on Sunday, on Tuesday night, and then Andrew DiCecco talked about it because Andrew covered the game for us. He was in the locker room. It sounds like the players were sick and tired of hearing about Derrick Henry, and everybody brought the physicality. Obviously, the offensive line, which we're going to get to in a minute, just embarrassed Tennessee. Tennessee, even when they played Buffalo, that was a different game. That was in week two.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was like, okay, we're putting our hard hats on. They say the big boy pads, and they went after it. And the running game didn't matter. I wouldn't read anything into it. And kudos to Hurts not leaving the pocket. By the way, I had to add this. Apparently, I was told there were three or four plays he clearly could have run. He didn't. He could have gotten maybe 10 yards. He didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
He rolled to his right. He waited till the pass target was breaking open, and he threw it instead of running when he had an alley. Good for him.
Yeah, yeah. Very few things bad to say about the offensive total. In fact, the game reminded me, Adam, of the old NBA Jam video. Do you remember that video game, NBA Jam?
Yeah, years ago.
So it's like 2-on-2 basketball, right? I might be getting it mixed up, but it's an old game I used to play where Nintendo, if you happen to have a player who made like three or four shots in a row, he would just get on fire. And like you would see like the flame for the ball, and then you could shoot from literally anywhere on the court, and he would make the shot because he was on fire, right? And that's how I felt about the Eagles' offense and Jalen Hurts with A.J. Brown. He's just throwing balls left, up, right, and then A.J. Brown, again, the guy's getting held, and he just turns around, grabs the ball, and it's a touchdown. Or he doesn't get the touchdown on the very next play, bam, he fakes out Christian Fulton out there, touchdown.
It's right, like
everything they did work well. They were on fire.
By the way, can you imagine being Mike Vrabel, who's Mr. Defense, who prides himself on being tough, physical, and nobody beats us?
Right.
These coaches, it's like they went into – I think this is pretty much the truth, because John DeFilippo told us this when he went over that Denver game. Remember on our Patreon?
Yes.
You can watch it, folks. If you haven't seen it, if you're a Patreon subscriber, if you haven't seen it, watch the interview. It's up there. John, we asked John when he kind of knew they were great. It wasn't just the Carolina game. He said it was the Denver game when they went after Aqib Talib.
Yeah,
they knew it when they game planned what they were going to do. That's when they scored 50 or 51 that game.
I believe that was a 55-10 game, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah,
they were. It was here in Philly. They were relentless and they didn't stop. Remember now, Hurts had 380, and they pulled him with what, 9 or 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
you could have had 100 yards. Like,
what's that?
You could have had 500 yards if they.
Yeah,
kept going
I said that
like
earlier
that.
In our other show. I was like, this is crazy. My buddy, a friend of mine who works for the Eagles on the business end, we hadn't talked in like a year. He called me, goes, were you at the game? I said, no, dude. No, we have a pregame, our postgame show. I said, I got to tell you, I felt like watching that game. It was like the Titans stole the Eagles coaches' lunches. And they said, we're going to get him back and throw her at their secondary. And they wouldn't stop until they submitted. Basically, what's happened? They basically said, all right, we're done with you guys. It's over.
That's absolutely true. By the way, that Broncos game was 51-23 in 2017. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Last thing on the offense, and I think Jason Avant put it best in Q&A. He said, imagine committing 12 penalties, almost all on offense, and still winning a game 35-10. Imagine that. He says, you can only do that if you are unbelievably talented from top to bottom. And that's the absolute truth about this Eagles team right now. There's not too many teams. How many times have you heard at the end of a game, man, we thought we were the better team, but when we commit 12 penalties, that obviously sets you back. I mean, 80 yards worth of penalties, almost the whole football field.
And again, those were accepted.
Crushed them. Yeah.
Well, there were 12 accepted. Were there any others?
There might have been. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But, 12 penalties means you're behind the sticks a whole lot by 5 or 10 yards.
That's crazy.
And yet you're still putting up 35 points. That means you're converting a lot of second and third and longs at will.
Second down. It was crazy
ugly for the Titans.
Analytically, you should be throwing early in the first quarter early. Not only should you be throwing in the first quarter, you should be throwing on first down because the defense doesn't really get a feel for what you're trying to do until probably second quarter. It was impressive. Again, the weather was good enough. The wind was under 10 miles an hour, so they could throw. And it was just, so running back wise, Gainwell really looked good. And then to the receivers and tight ends, A.J. Brown, everybody knows how great he was. Smith put on a route running clinic. Mm-hmm. He turned their corners inside out. He's so smooth. The Slim Reaper was whatever you want to call him. What's a skinny Batman?
Skinny Batman. Small Batman, skinny Batman, fat Batman.
He's something else, man.
I'm waiting for the next Batman to pop up. I don't know who it's going to be.
Who's left? Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of waiting
for Jordan Mailata to become like some kind of singing.
He would be missed for those ones.
He's the,
by the way, for those of Batman. You, what's that?
Crooning Batman because he's such a good singer.
Oh yeah, right. He was on the what's it called? The Masked Singer. Yeah. No, but he could be like Mr. Freeze. If for those of you, the old Batman series from the 60s with the late Adam West and Burt Ward, the Mr. Freeze, like they could just find a character from him from the old Batman series. Yeah, he's something else. But yeah, I would just say on the receivers and tight ends, Watkins, I love the way they used him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he drew a penalty. They used him. It was called a pass. It was on an end. Well, they had the double. What was the double reverse?
Is that the one where it was an end around, then it was a fleet of a he flicked it back? Yeah, that was a very strange play, but yeah.
But he got a 16 yarder. He drew a penalty downfield. I love the way these coaches are using him. By the way, he's their designated pre-snap movement guy. It was him and another player, I was told. Watkins almost runs in motion every game. There was one game where he did it a lot earlier, but and you'll see him. One game, he had some kind of weird like hand motion. I don't know what the hell that was about, but I'll tell you what, they've got it. Smith can run, Brown can run, and he's unbelievably great in contested catches. Watkins can absolutely fly. These coaches, see, part of great coaching is understanding how to use personnel, and this is what happened in 17 with that staff and this staff has got it going on right now.
No doubt about it. All right, we'll move on to the Eagles defense against the Titans offense.
You forgot the offensive line. No, you forgot the offensive line.
Oh, I thought we were talking about how they stoned Jeffrey Simmons. Yeah, but
here's what they did. Okay, so here's what they would. This only take 30 seconds.
Yeah, go for it.
Their combo blocks obliterated. They were so synchronized. It's the scouting. You got to give, obviously, Stoutland credit. Now, the penalty's absurd. It started on the first play of the game. It's ridiculous. It's all correctable. But Hurts had so much time, and I have not gotten – the snap to release timing yet. We'll try to get it for Friday's show, but it was ridiculous where it was pitch and catch, and I know there's some stuff on Twitter, some good memes there from some people cut up some of the TV copy. I'm not sure, but they had them so much standing up. This was more impressive than the first Washington game, basically, because I also think the offensive line knew what they were getting from tape study and hearing it too, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
They had it going on, and they gave up maybe two pressures in the game, which is unheard of in an NFL game.
Yeah. This Titans front was good, and they just there was very little pressure.
They embarrassed
there was
them.
One play that led to the hold on the right guard, Seumalo, which was one of the few holds.
He also played well, by the way.
Starts. He played well. I mean, he was going up against one of the best, too. But, Bud Dupree was neutralized.
Yep. He got Simmons one-on-one. He actually held his own. He did a great job, I was told. This was an unbelievable game for the coaches. I call this a coaches game. I even feel better now about it from talking to people who graded the tape. So I'm pretty happy about that just based on what we thought. Folks, if you didn't hear our pregame show, Cosell and Avant were phenomenal. Jeff put some clips up. They were like, they're always great, but this was like next level stuff. Because it's rare that you call 10 things and 8 of them happen. We had great information. It was pretty fun. And they, I just wish we would have, I just didn't think you could do this to the Titans. It was pretty remarkable to me.
It was definitely remarkable. Okay, let's move on to Eagle defense. First, we'll tell everybody to check out our friends at PHLSportsNation.com, enhancing the fans' experience with their coverage. All Philadelphia sports teams for the fan, by the fan is their motto. So make sure you check them out at PHLSportsNation.com. And we'll pause real quick to hear a word from our great sponsors, including our friends at Sky Motor Cars.
Sky Motor Cars in Westchester is a different sort of dealership. All it takes is one look at their Highline pre-owned vehicles that people all over the country want and need. Owner Brett Schuller, make sure you don't spend a dime of your money before you purchase the car. Sky Motor Cars allows you to make all the decisions regarding your next vehicle. At Sky Motor Cars, you never have to spend more than necessary. Visit skymotorcars.com today or call 610-918-7225.
And if you stop at Sky Motor Cars in Westchester, PA, make sure you tell them Adam just sent you. You'll get a great deal. If not, visit them at skymotorcars.com. All right. Where do we start with this Eagles defensive effort? I mean, you have to start up front. Defensive line. I was a little surprised by the Tennessee running game. I mean, I know they're going to do what they do and pound you with Derrick Henry up the middle, but I thought they would try to get a little bit more creative, a little more outside zone if they could. I know that's not Henry's best style, but that's what usually works well against the Eagles. But the Eagles were real. Hey, man, they were prepared. They came with the gang tackles.
We said this in the pregame show. They're going to go after 71 Dennis Daly, and they in fact, it got so bad. I listened to Vrabel on Monday in his press conference with the media, and they asked him, are you going to replace Dennis Daly? they crushed him. He's not a left tackle at this level. He's a backup right who could play left because he played left in college. He's just not athletic enough. Nicholas Petit-Ferre, who actually has had a good season. He's a little bit ahead of schedule. He's number 78. I only knew that who he was because I spoke to two people. They said 78 got his lunch handed to him. I'm like, okay, who's that? Oh, Ferre. Yeah, Petit-Ferre. He struggled. And I got to tell you, Reddick,
mm-hmm.
He had this. I had to watch it because I wanted to see it. He had one of those second reaction sacks where we told you this was going to happen, like before the season started. He did this a lot with Carolina. He would run past the tackle, kind of fall down or stumble or just run past him and then get back up and get the quarterback. The first sack I think was Hargraves was because of Reddick. He made Tannehill move right into Hargrave.
Mm.
He had a great game. Sweaty had this one great sack. Oh my God. I can't believe how well he moves considering that bad leg.
Yeah, he had this good move.
What's that?
He's been really good. I mean, for, you know, going into the year two of that contract, he has not had too many injuries there or issues there.
He had this one move where he went jab step right and he went left and the dude whiffed and he got Tannehill. He was those two guys met at the quarterback, two or three times. Both were great. Hargrave was really good, and I got to give 91 Fletcher Cox credit. His energy was great. Folks, it's not about sacks as much with him now. It's effort, consistent effort. And Avant, I'm going to get to give Avant a gold star here. When he said before the first game that you watch, Cox is going to be motivated by the addition of Sue, who had a great pressure mm-hmm. in this game. Sue and Joseph, he nailed it because Cox has played really well since those two guys have gotten here.
Yes, I agree. You know what? And that, I agree with you that it's about, is he giving you max effort? It's not about the sacks. It's really just about, are you fighting through the double teams? Are you creating pressures? They've got these guys on the outside.
By the way,
yeah, and the run. Right. Yeah, they got guys on the outside who are cleaning up pretty well with Reddick. It's funny, you picked Reddick, I think, as your player of the game, and I've Sweat, and they wound up basically being the primary sack guys in that game. So just a fantastic all-around game from the defensive front. And, of course, Linval Joseph to get in there and play a decent amount when they were in their five-man fronts with Jordan Davis only playing a few snaps was big too.
Yeah, Joseph played early. He played a lot, and then he didn't really have to play much because what happened was the Eagles were up by so much, he just didn't have to play.
Right.
It got out of hand, you know, by the second quarter. You could kind of see where this game was going. And I got to give – I know this isn't the defensive line, but the reason why they shut down Henry was not just the D-line. The corners tackled – tremendously well.
Yes.
Bradbury had two great tackles. Blankenship stuck his nose in there.
Nakobe Dean.
We'll get to Dean in a second. Slay tackled well, got in there. They played the force well. BG, by the way, he I love the way they use him. You know, you could see him smiling after the play. He had a great sack. This is something, you know, to behold here. They got it going on right now, and their D line just embarrassed the Titans offensive line is bottom five. I don't know how they have the record as good as it is. I know their coach well, but the Eagles handed them their lunch.
Yeah, I mean, when you run the ball like that, it usually helps out your offensive line. But when you can't, then it gets exposed, like you saw the Eagles be able to do. Linebacker Nakobe Dean was able to get in there and do some things.
Yeah, Dean for having getting thrown in there for Kaiser White. He did a nice job. He had the pass defense. He had the one tackle with his one hand or one arm, whatever it was.
Yeah, it was amazing.
He didn't look too out of play. I mean, there may have been a couple of plays. It wasn't quite where you'd want him to be, but he did a yeoman's job considering. So, folks, you wanted to see him play. You got in there. Not just a special team. We'll get to special teams because we got a couple good notes there that you're probably not aware of. But their front seven did a really nice job. And even Christian Ellis, who had two really nice plays on special teams, because it was a blowout, he got some plays on defense.
Right. So we talked in the secondary, Adam, about the only kind of spot of concern might be the slot where Josiah Scott's been filling in for Avante Maddox, and teams have been able to get him at times, whether it was Watson or McLaurin, Michael Pittman, Paris Campbell, little, of course, Treylon Burks got him. I mean, that was a good connection. And when he went out, that favored the Eagles. And after that, you know, the only other really big connection they had was the one to the tight end that we talked about in the Mojos. Yeah. So other than that, there were really, you know, nothing to worry about there.
So what they did is they moved the corners up, they moved the safeties up. They had a much thicker box and made them in fact, there were a couple plays where Henry got past the first level of defense, but then Edwards would fill. They'd get Henry. Oh, I didn't write it down. Someone told me that Henry got stoned by it might have been Bradbury. I'm not sure. So someone who you wouldn't think would stone Henry got him. Mm-hmm. It was just one of these things. I truly believe, based on, you know, some of the comments that we got from Andrew and Devon knew some. I guess he heard some stuff. These clearly the players were motivated. They're like, Henry's not doing this in our house, and they got him. I mean, the coaching was great. The scheme is great. You know what I love? You know what's embarrassing for Tennessee? The Eagles' blitz percentage is way down from earlier in the season. They're down maybe 8 to 10%.
Yeah,
and they got them so badly. Oh, by the way, their stunts are fantastic. Everything they're doing is so good, and it's Gannon's doing a really good job. In the Fangio style defense, Vic Fangio is one of the best defensive coordinators in NFL history. You really follow the league? He never blitz very much. He's a coverage based defense, zone exchange, and it works. And this is what they're doing right now.
No doubt about it. All right, we move on to special teams real quick. You said you had some nuggets, and obviously it was, I mean, people could see with their eyes that it was, there were some really good contributions. You know, we saw Christian Ellis make a big tackle, saw Jack Stoll make a big tackle. And then, of course, Britton Covey had a few nice returns.
Yeah, so what happened? Let's get to the coverage first.
Sure.
One second. Hang on a second. So one thing with Covey. Coverage. They stayed in their lanes, and what's happened to them, and it seemed to happen like a lot of this season, one guy would make a mistake, and that's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
Where everything else is, everyone's where they're supposed to be, where they're making sure the returner can't go anywhere, and then the one guy makes a mistake. There weren't any mistakes in this game. So they did a good job there, but then the Covey stuff, this is the best block. You know, the thing about Covey is people want to blame him for a lot of the stuff. What we were told is they had not really blocked well for him. This is the best block game by far. And the funny thing is he made a mistake. I actually went back on what someone told me. Go back and watch his second to last return, I think it was, without writing it down. This is what I was told over the phone. And what happened was he initially went to the right area where it was blocked well, and then for some reason he went the other way.
Hmm.
And then he tried to go back. It was too late. So he probably lost. He should have gone to his right. Maybe could have had 20 yards. He was great. He's got great quicks. It was Blackwell. And he's going to be a good returner. I know people say he looked like a crash dummy earlier in the season because he was getting knocked around. But he looks good right now. And their coverage was good. Blocked up well. Disciplined. No, this is, as you know, I know you've said all week. And it's hard to say it's not. It's the best game of the season for them. All three phases. But can the special teams be special again?
Yeah, that will be, you know, sustainability will be a big thing. We'll see if Ellis gets another call up and continues to.
Oh,
yeah. Especially with Shashare no longer part of the unit there. So that was a little interesting. We'll see if he gets back on the practice squad eventually. That's going to do it. All right. We'll wrap up this game. We will preview the game on the Friday podcast, as we always do. And then, of course, the Sunday pregame show, but that'll be it for this episode of Inside the Birds, the leading podcast in Eagles Intel. As always, we thank you for playing with us, Inside the Bird.